This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy. More than 60 people have been killed, nearly 900 injured by an earthquake that toppled buildings in the Turkish city of Izmir and created sea surges on at least two Greek islands. Rescue teams in Turkey early Sunday pulled a man alive from the rubble of a collapsed building. The man is believed to have survived for 33 hours under the debris of a residential building that was flattened during the earthquake. At least 64 Turkish citizens and two Greeks are believed to have died in the earthquake. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan visited Izmir Saturday evening, where he promised the government would help victims who lost their homes with temporary housing and rent and start construction of new buildings. The deadly 7.0 earthquake originated from a 250-kilometer fault line off the coast of the Greek island of Samos, streaming across the Aegean Sea that divides Turkey and Greece. Hundreds of aftershocks have followed. Security forces in the Belarusian capital have detained more than 200 people in the latest anti-government protests fueled by a disputed presidential election 12 weeks ago. Thousands of demonstrators took part Sunday in marches in Minsk as part of a nearly daily protest demanding that Alexander Lukashenko's resignation and a new vote. According to a list published by the human rights group, nearly all the people detained were taken into custody. Four journalists were among those detained, and two of them were severely beaten, according to the Belarusian Association of Journalists. The news comes from the Belarus service at the sister network Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty. Columns of security trucks and buses to hold detainees could be seen around the city as people marched toward a well-known monument to Soviet-era repression, victims outside the capital. This is VOA News. Police in the French city of Lyon have released an initial suspect in a shooting of a Greek Orthodox priest. The suspect was arrested Saturday after the priest was shot twice in the chest with a hunting rifle at point-blank range. The suspect was released after authorities found no evidence of his involvement. Police say the priest remains hospitalized in serious condition. The attack comes after a young Tunisian killed three people inside the Notre Dame Basilica in the southern French city of Nice on Thursday and the beheading of a history teacher near Paris earlier in the month. Security throughout France remains high after the deadly stabbings, while President Emmanuel Macron tried to ease tensions with Muslims in the country. French leaders have termed Thursday's incident an Islamist terrorist attack after the perpetrator shouted Allahu Akbar, Arabic for God is great, as he decapitated a woman and killed two others. Thursday's attack followed the beheading of a teacher, Samuel Paty, earlier in October after the republication of cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad by the Paris-based satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo. White House coronavirus advisor Scott Atlas has apologized for giving an interview to Russia's Kremlin-backed television station RT. He said he was unaware the outlet was a registered foreign agent in the United States. Atlas is a neurodialogist and a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. He appeared in the channel on Saturday and criticized coronavirus lockdown measures, calling them an epic failure at stopping the virus's spread. RT registered as a foreign agent 3 years ago. A January 2017 report from U.S. intelligence agency said the television station, which broadcast on cable in the United States, is Russia's state-run propaganda machine, and that it contributed to the Kremlin's campaign to interfere with the 2016 presidential election in favor of the winning candidate, Republican President Donald Trump. After that report, the U.S. Department of Justice insisted that RT America comply with requirements under the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Britain Sunday became the ninth country with more than 1 million confirmed coronavirus cases. As of early Sunday, Johns Hopkins University reported that Britain had just over 1 million infections and more than 46,000 deaths. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, Saturday joined his counterparts in France, Germany, and Belgium in ordering a new nationwide lockdown. New national lockdown restrictions to go into effect across England on Thursday and will last for at least a month. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Ouattara takes early lead in election results, but the opposition says it will not accept the results.
That process in the beginning has no respect and few conditions. That were our conditions. So we don't recognize the result as it is, and we're looking for a civil transition.
Guinea's main opposition leader files an election challenge with the country's constitutional court. Today is protest day in Tanzania against last Wednesday's election results. Some Ugandan legislators are against their country borrowing more money. And Kenya is concerned about new spike in COVID-19 cases.
If only people would observe and would be caring of their fellow citizens, it is possible to keep COVID at bay and still be able to live and lead a normal life.
And final voting in the 2020 U.S. election is tomorrow. This morning, a focus on the candidates with African descent who are running for offices. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Are still being counted in Saturday's Ivory Coast presidential election, but incumbent President Alassane Ouattara has taken a commanding lead in preliminary results released on Sunday from 20 of the country's 108 electoral districts. However, the opposition, which boycotted Saturday's vote, says it will not recognize the results. Isiaka Sangare is the spokesperson of the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo, one of the parties that make up the opposition alliance. He says the opposition wants a civil transition.
We don't recognize the result as it is right now, and we're looking for a civil transition.
What do you mean by a civil transition?
A civil transition means that we are ready now to get in the negotiation with some international pressures, like the United Nations, in order to discuss about the situation. Because as you say, we no more recognize the present royal. So if you don't recognize it, what you have to do is to think how you're going to get a process, an equal process, respecting the law as this process should be at the beginning. Is what we're looking for, and have some interview with the international community. Because for us it's important, people should know what we are looking for. So this is a process that will begin right now. And we have a few structures, and with those structures, we have a plan how to see the court, the election court, and also the constitutional court, because we have a few problems with those structures.
It sounds to me the opposition wants to set up another government.
Not for now. We want to give the international community an opportunity to get involved in that process, so that we can see and have a mediation, and we wish that mediation should help us to find solution more equitable, so that we can go for a new election. That's what we are looking for. But we're not speaking at that step of the government.
As you know, President Ouattara, the way the results are going, he is expected to win the election. So will he be involved in the process you are talking about?
But anyway, each party has the way to think the process is. They think that they should be the process. We say, no, this is not the process. We don't recognize this election. So when both parties are such a position, the best thing to do is to sit around the table and look for what we can do so that both parties should be in a position where we can accept the result. For now, we don't recognize that election, so we're not going to recognize the president that is the result of that process.
Isiaka, I understand the opposition met with Western ambassadors on Sunday. What was the purpose of the meeting and what was the outcome?
I wasn't at that meeting, but some people say that the U.S. ambassador and the French ambassador met Mr. Onabeji, which is one of the opposition side political parties. And so for now, I don't know what they speak about, but the most important, you know that in that area, they spoke mainly about the process. But we have a declaration up today to let people know our position.
Isiaka Sangare is the spokesperson of the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan.
Guinean opposition leader Selou Darlene Diallo Sunday filed a challenge in the Constitutional Court against the results of the October 18 presidential election. The Electoral Commission declared incumbent President Alpha Condé the winner of the election. Ousmane Diallo is the political advisor and director of communications for opposition leader Selou Darlene Diallo's UFDG party. He says he's confident the court will overturn the results in favor of his party.
The appeal of the Constitutional Court contained the grievance we have with regard to the result proclaimed by the Seni. We dispute this result because of their fraudulent nature and the inconsistencies we have detected. We have documented all the problems with irrefutable evidence. We are waiting for the court to say the laws with a party. Even if we debt it impartiality, we still take this legal step. Social peace and the stability of our country are at stake.
Do you think, Ousmane, that the Constitutional Court is independent enough, or this is just a formality?
No one believe in the independence of the courts and its impartiality. It's important to remember that is illegal allowed the Seni to ignore constitutional provision to meet the requirement of former President Alpha Conde. This court has taken actions that make it possible to doubt it. It is up to her to prove her independence by saying the law objectively.
Mr. Selou Darlene Diallo met with the delegation of ECOWAS, African Union, and the United Nations. How would you describe that meeting?
President-elect Selou Darlene Diallo actually met the delegation who came to listen to the protagonist. He took the opportunity to regret the absence of this institution in the Guinean crisis during the later. Even though all the indicators showed an exacerbation of political tension in the country. Unlike Mali, we have not received the attention of ECOWAS and the African Union.
What is the mood of Mr. Diallo himself after this election, considering that this was perhaps his third try for the presidency?
He is confident and grateful to the people of Guinea, who have kindly trusted him by electing him on this third attempt. As soon as he takes office, he will work to reconcile the Guinean in a kind of true justice and reconciliation to ensure that we get back on a good footing. A divided society cannot develop harmoniously. We remain hopeful that the former president will have the wisdom to acknowledge the defeat and avoid a dramatic crisis in our country.
Ousmane Diallo is the political advisor and director of communications for Guinean opposition leader Selou Darlene Diallo's UFDG party. He was speaking with us from Conakry. Tanzanian President John Magufuli on Sunday received his re-election certificate from the country's Electoral Commission after defeating main opposition leader Tundu Lissu in the October 28 presidential election. Mr. Magufuli will serve for his second five-year term. He promised to work with the opposition to deliver on his campaign promises. However, the two main opposition parties, Chadema and the Alliance for Change and Transparency Act, Wazalendo, have refused to accept the results, alleging fraud, and called for peaceful demonstrations beginning today, Monday. Tundu Lissu is the Chadema presidential candidate.
Purpose of the demonstrations is to pressurize the authorities to call for fresh elections and a newly constituted electoral commissions. As you know, the two electoral commissions that supervise these general elections have completely failed in their duty, and we are calling for their complete dissolution and reconstitution in order to make them independent of the ruling party and to be able to conduct democratic, free and fair and credible elections.
How likely, sir, that the government would entertain the idea of another election?
There is no foregone conclusion that they will accept it. And that's the whole point of calling for protests. We are calling for our people to press the government to make sure that it complies with the just and legitimate demands for the voices of the people to be heard in the free, fair, and credible elections. If the government was the kind of government that would heed to the people's legitimate demands, we wouldn't be calling for demonstrations. We are calling for demonstrations precisely because the government is not going to listen to voices of reason.
Do you need permission from the police to have a protest?
Well, Tanzanian law requires the police to be notified of the protests at least 48 hours prior to the demonstrations. Our law does not stipulate that the police should give permission for any demonstration to proceed, and therefore we are not seeking for permission. It's just a notification.
The results of the election seem overwhelming. One would say that your party really was taken to the showers. Do you think if there's a new election, you will have a chance again?
Look, our polling was telling us that would have scored between 65 and 70% of the vote if the elections were free and fair. The result that the commission declared has nothing to do with the voting that took place on Wednesday. It has everything to do with this illegal tapping of the ballots that was done countrywide.
Elections are taking place in many African countries. We have Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea recently, and there's Uganda coming up next year. How do you view the state of elections in African countries from the standpoint of the opposition?
The state of elections in Africa is a question of major concern. It's not only to the citizens of the countries involved, but of Africans generally. It's also a matter of major concern to the world, because flawed elections lead to unrest. They lead to political chaos and turmoil. And eventually you have people fleeing countries and the people being displaced from their homes, their lands. You have a deterioration of security situation. And this is a matter of major concern to humanity. And therefore, the international community, again, has a responsibility to make sure that elections are free, fair, and credible in Africa and elsewhere.
Tundu Lissu is the Chadema presidential candidate. He was speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dodoma. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 2nd. Kenya is seeing a dramatic rise in COVID-19 cases, particularly in the month of October, according to the World Health Organization. The rise is notable, especially among health workers. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, the spike follows the easing of some restrictions, including the reopening of bars and the reduction in overnight curfew hours since the end of September.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta yesterday Sunday gave a subtle hint that the recently lifted restrictions against the spread of COVID-19 could soon be brought back. President Kenyatta said that it is possible to keep COVID-19 at bay and still be able to live and lead a normal life by taking personal responsibility. He urged Kenyans to strictly observe COVID-19 guidelines.
We are going through that very difficult time of saying, now what do we do again? Do we close up? We shall be coming back to that, not today, but soon. If only people would observe and would be caring of their fellow citizens, it is possible to keep COVID at bay and still be able to live and lead a normal life. We have been having a serious COVID problem in this country, and it is growing.
Addressing a news conference, Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union Secretary General Dr. Mwachonda Chibanzi confirmed that health workers were not spared in the surging numbers of COVID-19 infections. He called on the government to do more in protecting health workers.
The month of October, we witnessed the highest number of health workers' infections. Nairobi is at the top of healthcare workers' infections. And if they cannot be provided adequate and comprehensive medical insurance, then we'll lose this fight because Nairobi is still the epicenter of this infection.
So we are calling upon the government to ensure that healthcare workers are, one, provided with comprehensive medical insurance cover, and two, compensated. Will not accept any more healthcare workers being the martyrs.
Dr. Chibanzi also said Kenyan political leaders have failed health workers in the fight against the virus by holding political rallies where little or no precautionary measures are observed. He said that this has been listed as one of the catalysts to the surging number of infections.
The president himself, during the National COVID-19 conference, said that political leaders must take responsibility on this matter of COVID. And so as healthcare workers, we are the ones who will be left to handle the burden of rising infections in the hospitals and to deal with infections amongst the healthcare workers. So today we'd like to tell the political leadership of this country that you need to support healthcare workers by downscaling this heightened political activity of mass gathering without adherence to the COVID-19 protocols that have been set aside by the Ministry of Health.
The easing of some COVID-19 restriction measures in September has been attributed to the recent spike in the COVID-19 infections in the country. The capital, Nairobi, is leading in number of infections. In a fresh bid to curb the rising infections, President Uhuru Kenyatta will convene a meeting this Wednesday with various stakeholders to deliberate on measures to mitigate the country's rising COVID-19 cases. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
A section of Ugandan legislators is opposed to the government move to borrow over 6.5 trillion Ugandan shillings, or about $1.7 billion. The legislators say they worry that the money will be used to fund electioneering rather than development projects, thereby increasing Uganda's debt burden. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala.
David Bahati, Uganda's State Minister of Finance for Planning, told the parliament last week that the money is required to improve security in the country.
The Minister of Defense, as was certified and verified by the classified committee of this House, has an outstanding contractual obligation to meet over the next 3 years. And we have been budgeting for it every financial year for almost 3.5 trillion for the stability of this nation, for making sure that our defense system is robust and solid to meet the challenges of the day and for the future.
Minister Bahat says the government will borrow part of this money from the International Monetary Fund, IMF, while the rest will be obtained by domestic borrowing. The money is also meant to run state house activities, according to Minister Bahati. Democratic Party legislator Moses Kasivante says that hefty amount isn't necessary for defense.
Why should we stake Ugandan taxpayer to the economies of developed world and we cannot show the taxpayer the worth of why we should be borrowing? It takes a lot of money to maintain a presidency. It takes a lot of money to say we have security. But who are we fighting, for example? Uganda is not under attack from any external world.
Another legislator, Kasiano Wadri, agrees.
I mean, what is there in a classified expenditure that has not been adequately budgeted? And this is coming at a time of campaigns. And I'm quite sure as the day follows night, this money is just being borrowed for nothing but to facilitate President Museveni's campaigns and to empower the police to have more brutality on the people.
The government says this borrowing money is fund budget deficits brought about by the effects of COVID-19, resulting in too low revenue collections. The International Monetary Fund has said Uganda remains at low risk of debt distress. A country is at a low risk of debt distress if none of the debt burden indicators breach their respective threshold under the baseline and stress tests. At least a quarter of Uganda's budget is meant to cater for debt and treasury operations, while another third goes for recurrent expenditures. Julius Mukunda, the head of Civil Society Budget Advocacy Group, NGO, says the government should only borrow for developmental projects.
You can see that we have more supplementary budgeting that has more of health-related work. As such, I would think that borrowing would definitely not be pegged to elections. Nevertheless, whether we are borrowing or not is that during elections we continuously see more election-related expenditure increasing, especially on the side of government.
The Bank of Uganda and some economic experts have advised against excessive domestic borrowing, saying it will discourage local banks from lending to investors. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Final voting in the 2020 U.S. election is tomorrow, Tuesday. More than a dozen first- or second-generation Americans of African descent are running for office in the U.S. election. VOA Salem Solomon has the story.
I swore an oath to defend our Constitution, West Point, two tours in Kuwait. After nine
it's been a long journey leading Yinka Fileti from Lagos, Nigeria, to candidacy for Missouri Secretary of State. He moved to the U.S. at the age of 7 and, after moving around as a child, earned an appointment to the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He served for 6 years as a combat arms officer in the U.S. Army, including 2 deployments to the Middle East. But after leaving the Army, graduating from law school, and working in both private practice and as a state prosecutor, it was a different event that inspired him to serve again. The 2014 shooting of teenager Michael Brown by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, made Fileti reevaluate how he could make an impact. He wanted to help rectify the deep inequalities he saw in his community.
I began to realize that many of the issues we were working on, when we pulled the thread back on those issues, the thread ended at the state level. I needed to get to the state level, and that's why I'm running. And specifically for Secretary of State, because that's where the fight is for democracy in our state.
Fileti is one of a large number of first or second generation Americans of African descent running for office in the U.S. The candidates will get their answers from voters on Election Day. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports and Jerry Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the announcement of new dates for the last 2 matches in this year's CAF Champions League by the Confederation of African Football. The semi-final second leg between Egypt's Zamalek and Raja Casablanca of Morocco will now be played on November the 4th at the Cairo International Stadium. The Moroccan champions lost 1-0 to Zamalek in the first leg in Casablanca in October and are battling to meet another Egyptian side, Al Ahly, in the final. That final will be played on November 27th at the Burj Arab Stadium near Alexandria, with both games set to be played behind closed doors. The second leg of the semi-final had twice been postponed after an outbreak of COVID-19 at the Raja camp in the run-up to the fixture. The South African Football Association have blamed the COVID-19 lockdown for the kit debacle that saw Bafana players and technical staff wearing different kits during the recently friendly internationals against Zambia and Namibia. While the players wore the swanky new kits provided by Le Coq Sportif, the technical staff, including coach Molefe Nseki, wore old tracksuits with the Nike sign blacked out by what looked like masking tape. On Saturday, Tobago Motlanthe, SAFA CEO, claimed the reason for these was due to the strict lockdown regulations that were announced by the South African government.
That's a determination of doing this. And we must not just isolate incidents, because COVID had impact on everyone, even ourselves at our workplaces. That COVID impact were felt it. People were not working. Who was going to produce that kit?
Elsewhere in Egypt, Pitso Mosimane won his 14th piece of silverware on Sunday after Al Ahly lifted the Egyptian Premier League for a record-extending 42nd time. Pitso Mosimane joined the Egyptian giants with a league title seemingly wrapped up. However, he managed to walk Al Ahly home with a near-perfect record. Al Ahly have dropped points just once since Mosimane took over earlier this month in a goalless draw against Pyramid FC. In Zambia, Zesco United conceded late on as they had to settle for a 1-1 draw against Napasa Stars in their opening match of the 2020-2021 Zambia Premier League season on Sunday. In other matches played on Sunday, Power Dynamos claimed a 1-0 win over New Boys Young Green Eagles. On Saturday, Forest Rangers ensured it would be a losing start for champions Nkana FC as they claimed a 2-0 victory in their clash. Olympic champions Caster Semenya and Wynne Van Niekerk, among 43 athletes included in Athletics South Africa's preparation squad for the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. The preparation squad for the rescheduled games features 32 men and 11 women, while a further 15 sprinters are in consideration for relay teams. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, November 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a great week.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your
day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.